I am Kathy Bossert, interviewer for the Burnaby Mountain Oral History Project. Today is, you know, I have the wrong date. What is today?
27th.
It's November 27th, 2015. I am interviewing Dr. Ron Baker at his home in Burnaby. Dr. Baker, thank you for spending time with me today. I imagine that this year has been a very busy one with Simon Fraser University celebrating its 50th anniversary. You were one of its founders, the first faculty member hired by the president of Simon Fraser University in 1964, and the university's first director of academic planning, and you were also first head of the English department. I really appreciated you sending me this article that you wrote called The Beginnings, just about your history with SFU. And you begin the article with a quote from Wordsworth, a poem. "Bliss was it in that dawn to be alive, but to be young was very heaven." And then you write at the beginning of the article, "So wrote Wordsworth of the beginnings of the French Revolution. The beginnings of Simon Fraser were hardly that revolutionary. I was not that young, and the frenzied activity of 1964 was hardly blissful. Nevertheless, the beginning of Simon Fraser was the most exciting time of my academic life." Tell me more about that. Why was it the most exciting time of your academic life?
Well, unlike the other new universities in Canada, we didn't have to be responsible to committees or to anyone except Gordon Shrum. He had been just about everything at UBC, head of physics, dean of graduate studies, director of housing, colonel of the COTC, director of extension, and I'm sure all sorts of other things. And he had retired, and when the government nationalized BC Electric, which ran all the power and transit, public transport in British Columbia, he was made co-chairman. So he was tremendously powerful, and he had very strong opinions. He was asked by the government if he would like to set up a new university, and he said yes immediately. He was due to speak the next day, that was on the phone, he was due to speak the next day at a student symposium on Bowen Island that UBC ran. We took about 120 students away and 20 faculty, and we talked about various things. We had different topics, and that year was academic programs. And Shrum was the main speaker. But all he could think of was that he'd been asked to found Simon Fraser University. So he said to the students, "We're going to have big lectures and tutorials. And we have to have big lectures because there aren't many good lecturers." He said, "How many of you had Roy Daniels for freshman English?" Not one. Roy didn't teach freshman English. "How many of you had Earl Burney?" Not one. Earl didn't teach freshman English. So he played with this. And then he said, "Well, take English 200. You've all had English 200. He said, "My daughter had English 200. I don't know who she had." And he did the same act with her. Well, actually, I stood up and said, "Well, actually, she had me." So, of course, the students knew me and they didn't know him. So there was great amusement. This was on a Sunday morning. So that afternoon, I get a call from Jenny Shrum, his daughter. And she said, "I hear my father was being very silly this morning." And she said, "He used to complain I quoted you so much." So at any rate, the Monday, I get a call from Gordon Shrum, would I go down to Hydro and would I come to Simon Fraser? And he said two things had been decided. It was to be large lecture, small tutorial, and it was to be all-year operation. And he asked what I thought of them. Well, large lecture, small group, was what I'd been doing for years at UBC. teaching engineers, foresters and architects. Actually, it was fairly standard across the country, but Schramm didn't seem aware of that. So that was no problem. I was very much in favor of it. All your operation, I simply didn't know much about. I knew that the CAUT, the kind of professors' union, was opposed to it. And I knew that nearly all faculty in Canada were violently opposed to it. And that if we had, especially the quarter system, we'd never get any Canadians at all. And recruiting was incredibly difficult. Not only were there 15 new universities all recruiting, but the old universities were all expanding. So in BC, for example, we estimated we needed somewhere between 20 and 30 PhDs in math. UBC wanted almost as many, and Victoria wanted a dozen or so. That was just in BC. Canada produced five that year. Two were on student visas and had to leave. One went into the insurance business, and that left two. And I don't know what the total demand was, but it was hundreds. So if we'd gone to the quarter system, we would never get any Canadians at all. It wasn't popular with faculties. Schramm liked it, I think mainly because the faculty had to teach for 9 months instead of seven. And of course, that's why we wouldn't have got anyone. So my first assignment was to study all-year operation, and Schramm was committed to one form or another. So I did the usual thing for an academic. I read and I studied and I talked to people and I wrote a paper which laid out the pros and cons of each system. And then I recommended the trimester system because it fitted the Canadian academic year. In other words, two semesters were just like a standard Canadian academic year, but we had another semester in the summer. I had always been opposed to our traditional summer sessions because I thought they were fraudulent. We pretended, and the students pretended, that you could do in 5.5 weeks what you did in a year, which is absolute nonsense. And I thought I would never teach in it. I thought it was fraudulent. Nearly all the teachers in the province were building up their degrees that way, and I thought it was fraudulent. So we went to the trimester system. And in some ways, it was a success. It was a very successful recruiting because if you taught for 3 semesters in a row, that's 12 months, you got 8 months off on full pay. Well, for people who hadn't finished their PhDs, that was marvelous. They could go and do a regular academic year on full pay and so on. But it was also good for people who did research other than in the summer. That is, if you had a research project that involved things in the winter, you could get time off in the winter. You could also, instead of just getting essentially about 3 months off in the summer, you could get 8 months off, but still on full pay. So it was a tremendous advantage recruiting. Administratively, it was a nightmare, absolute nightmare. And because you would have people who'd settled a number of issues in Senate and in faculty, and then they would take 8 months off, and you've got a whole bunch of new people who wanted to fight everything again in typical academic fashion. On top of that, Simon Fraser began with essentially no academic administration. We had no deans, we had no vice presidents. All the heads reported to the president, but then so did everyone else, or to Schramm. And the president and Schramm were really the only two people around with any authority. I had some in an advisory way, but essentially the heads of departments could do what they wanted. There were guidelines and some things we laid down, for example, we laid down that psychology should be essentially scientific, not psychoanalytic. we laid down that philosophy should be largely modern linguistic philosophy and so on. Mm-hmm. And so, is that all right?
Yes, that's fine. You're quite welcome to sit back.
So at any rate, we chose the trimester system. It did have a tremendous advantage that we hadn't really thought of for people, especially youngish mothers with children in Burnaby who couldn't get to UBC, who didn't have the time to do all that travel from Burnaby to UBC, and who needed flexibility of the trimester system. And in fact, I have a newspaper clipping of this, which I'll show you later, campaign for...
Is it this one?
Yeah, that's right. That SFU welcomed mature women with a desire to learn. And that was a surprise to us. When I moved here 4 years ago, I was asked to talk at the Burnaby Historical Society on the founding of Simon Fraser. And I was very surprised to find a bunch of women sitting there in a group who were wildly enthusiastic about Simon Fraser. And during question period, it came out. They were all young mothers living in Burnaby who wanted some further education. Under our mature entry clause, if they'd held a job for a year, if they were over 21, if they had tried some form of higher education, night school, correspondence school, we let them in. So they were wildly enthusiastic, and we got some of our best students from them. The woman who was the top student in education in our first graduation was a woman from Yorkshire who'd married a Canadian soldier during the war, had left school at 14 to work in a woolen mill, came here while he went to UBC, had twins, took a night school course, and came in with the top student. And there was this whole set of women who could get further education here in a regular schedule, not summer school, a regular schedule. And if they could fit it in the winter as the kids went to school, they could do it. If they hadn't gone to school, they might be able to do it in the summer because there were camps and things. So that was the beginning of Simon Fraser in that kind of thing, in that we could do things. And as far as I know, the government never interfered at all in our academic plans. And at there were no faculty, so you couldn't set up a Senate, except me, and I couldn't elect a Senate. There were no faculties, really. So the heads of departments, under guidelines, basically could do what they wanted. And that was very attractive to them. So on the one hand, the lack of administration, of checks and balances, of faculty control was great. It meant, fundamentally, I used to, well, as Hugh Johnston says, the way it worked, Baker proposed, Shrum disputed, and the president went along with the decision. And that was basically what happened. And so I rapidly learned that Shrum didn't want papers that set out everything. He simply wanted one-sentence things. I propose we have geography. Why? And he was a rather dominating man, and he would always attack you. It didn't matter what you said, he'd attack you. Well, I did all the preparation that I'd done for these papers, but I didn't give them to him because I didn't think he read them. And on the whole, we settled differences quite easily. In science, very easily, because he'd already appointed two heads of science that he respected tremendously. Rudy Herring in physics and Don Nelson in biology, and if they said something, that was that. I didn't want a compulsory science, and he was uncertain, but he asked the head of physics, and the head of physics had taken compulsory physics at UBC, and he said he didn't think it was any use to anyone, and it was especially no use to physics students. And the head of zoological affairs, biological affairs, said he wasn't in favour of it. He didn't think they were good. But if he had one, he wanted it to be a computer-based course in genetics for everyone. And so Schramm went along, but in the end, we didn't have it. The only things we fought about for nearly a year were compulsory English and a compulsory language. And Schramm was a pedant. He used to correct the president's memos. And he was determined, in fact, he proposed that the language be compulsory for all students for all 4 years, which would have been a disaster. We wouldn't have got anyone. And he used to say, I go to meetings around the world and I'm ashamed. I meet scientists from everywhere else in the world and they speak two or three or four languages. Canadians can't speak one. I used to say, yes, and they've all had high school French and probably 2 years of university French and they can't order a beer. Well, we fought like this for nearly a year and the calendar was going to press. And finally, we had to do it. And on English, I went down to Hydro for the last fight. And he gave me a letter, said, read that, Ron. So I read it, and it was pretty bad. And I said, who wrote it? Oh, one of the engineers. Where did he study? UBC. I said, well, in that case, he had English 100, English 101, English 150. After his first year in engineering, he had to write an essay on his summer work, marked 60% by the English department. English 250. After the second year, he wrote an essay on his summer work, marked 40% by the English department. And in third year, he had English 350. It doesn't work. All right, all right, all right. But anyway, that's the beginning of Simon Fraser. And yes, the attraction was being able to put in things that you thought should be put in.
Yes.
And do some things differently. And to complement UBC, we worked quite well with UBC.